I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Tony Aspler is Canada's premier wine writer. He's known as the Wine Guy, what with his prolific writing on wine for over 30 years. He was a wine columnist at the Toronto Star for over 20 years, and he's written 15 books on food and wine. He was on 3 years ago for the Wine Atlas of Canada, and now he's out with Tony Aspler's cellar book, How to Design, Build, Stock, and Manage Your Wine Cellar Wherever You Are. I don't drink wine. I guess I don't have a taste for it, but I enjoyed this book as it tells Tony's story about his love for wine and the sort of adventure he's had building a wine cellar. He lives in a condominium in Toronto, not somewhere you'd think a wine cellar were apt for. He pulls it off and tells how in this book. Also, you'll find recommendations as well as reference material to help with one's wine vocabulary and how to match food with wine. The book is published by Random House. The website for more is tonyaspler.com. Tony Aspler is a member of the Order of Canada and is a director of the Canadian Wine Library. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Tony Aspler. Good morning, Mr. Aspler.
Good morning. Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I read somewhere that you had dinner with Charles and Camilla when they were in Canada recently.
Yes. At Rideau Hall. That was very exciting. And I was seated next to Peter Millican, the Speaker of the House of Commons, and Jason Kenney, the Minister of Immigration. So that was really interesting to hear what they had to say. Didn't have any FaceTime with the Prince, but I had met him actually a few days earlier at the opening of the Niagara College Wine Visitors and Education Center. A funny thing happened there. The Prince, after cutting the ribbon or whatever, mingled with the crowd, and there was every year the Ontario Grape Growers elects a grape king, and the grape king gets a jacket, and on the breast pocket is a patch that says Grape King 2009, and this year's grape king is a man called Lou Puglisi, and when he shook the Prince's hand, he says, "You know, I'm royalty too."
The Prince of Wales, he is wine savvy, is he?
No, he has the occasional glass, but Camilla is. Camilla knows her wines.
And the wine at Rideau Hall that night, obviously Canadian, right?
Yes. I mean, ever since John Ralston Saul, insisted that all the wines in Rideau Hall be Canadian, that tradition has been followed. So we had, not only was the menu completely Canadian, I mean, from every province just about had something on the menu, but of course the wines were from British Columbia and from Ontario.
I'm assuming this is not the first time you've had dinner at Rideau Hall.
No. I was fortunate enough to get the Order of Canada, and that was an occasion when it was a wonderful dinner. But I've also been there on wine business to talk about wine to Canadian ambassadors and that kind of thing.
And the as you said, the menu there that night was particularly Canadian, with everything from with things from every province. I'm assuming that the wine as well. It's a great place for wine producers in this country, isn't it, that they get showcased there.
Yes, absolutely. And Michael Jean and her husband, Jean-Daniel Lafont, are actually inaugurating a new Governor General's Award. And this will be given in June. And the award is for the nation's table. So basically, it's an award for Canadian gastronomy, in line with the Governor General's Award for Literature.
Hmm. And will that honor restaurants, or how does that work?
I'm part of a committee, and we're working out the protocols, and what should it be? Who should get such an award? It's not a lifetime achievement award, ostensibly, but it's for people or institutions who have done most to educate or refine the Canadian palate.
As I mentioned off the top, that I don't have a taste for wine. Mm-hmm. I have it maybe very occasionally. Can one develop a taste for it?
Yes, I guess you can. I mean, when you think when people start to drink wine, it is in their late teens, early 20s. And what makes the transition from pop drinks to wine, it's usually a wine that has some sweetness to it, okay? So a lot of people started their, you know, when you think back, people started that transition with either something like Baby Duck or Lancers or Matthieu's Rosé or Manischewitz or something like that, a wine that has some sweetness. And as you get more accustomed to wine, the palate dries out. Just think about the first glass of beer you ever had. You know, it tasted bitter, and it was something you say, wow, do people actually drink this stuff? But then again, you get a taste for it.
Friday, the 25th of March, 1966. Where were you that day?
Friday, March.
You write that in the book.
Yes,
you were at your uncle's,
oh,
I think?
Yes, that's right. My Uncle Louis. That's right, having dinner. Yeah, and he served a 1959 Chateau Lafite. And this was sort of my Proustian Madeleine. It was such a different taste to anything I'd ever experienced that, you know, I just had to know more about it. And, you know, that's I guess, where it all began, my pursuit of the grape around the world. And since then, in my work, I taste about 4,000 wines a year, and I spit them out. Most of them, about 99% of them, I spit out, obviously. But this is the work of a wine writer is to keep tasting wines and, you know, try to find what is good and what is obviously good value at the same time.
So you're at your Uncle Louis.
Yeah.
That day in
Everybody
March.
Should have an Uncle Louis. In
yeah. Reality. He just liked wine, did he?
Oh, yeah. Well, Uncle Louis was quite rich, and so he could afford the best. And, in fact, he only bought the best, and that is the top wines. And when I began to understand what wines was about, I kept saying, Uncle Louis, you know, there are some wonderful wines which are not as expensive as the first growths of Bordeaux. And he said, nah, this is what I want, you know, because it was the best.
Now, you mentioned that 99% of the wines that you taste, you spit out. When you go to lunch or when you go to dinner and you order wine, you obviously drink that, right?
Oh, yeah, yes. No, yeah. But I mean, for instance, you see, I live in Toronto, and the Liquor Control Board of Ontario twice a month puts about 110 wines out at vintage stores, and I have to taste all of those wines. So, you know, I do it in, obviously, a couple of sessions, 100 wines at a time, and just having to taste the wines and make my notes. So, you know, that's... And then when I travel to wine country, I'm visiting four or five wineries a day, tasting there. So that's what I mean by actually spitting out.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite region of the country? Like, I mean, in Ontario, they produce wine there. We produce wine here in British
yeah.
Columbia. Is there a part of the country that's a particular favorite of yours?
Well, I'm very attached to the Naramata Bench. I think they're making some wonderful wines there. I also like some of the wine scenery in Quebec. The wines of Quebec are not that great, but you know, if you have them in situ, then you can appreciate them. But it's a very beautiful wine scape, as it were. And Ontario has some terrific wines too.
How popular is wine in Canada? Like, are there statistics on how much wine is consumed?
Yeah, we drink. Each province has its own statistics, and Quebec drinks the most wine. but you're looking about sort of 16, 17 liters per head per year. BC is next, and Ontario. So we're looking about 13, 14 liters a head.
As opposed to other drinks, is it more popular?
No, it's more popular than spirits, and it's getting beer has flatlined, and wine is growing, but beer is still the major Canadian drink.
Are we savvy though in terms of consuming wine? Do we know what sort of wine we're drinking and what's good and what's bad?
We're a lot more sophisticated than we were. I mean, it used to be, you know, you'd go into a bar and you'd order a glass of white wine or a glass of red wine. Now you're actually ordering by varietal. You're saying, I'd like a glass of Chardonnay, a glass of Sauvignon Blanc, or a Pinot Noir.
You lived in a house in Toronto, and how long ago was it that you moved to this condominium?
Oh, only a year ago.
And I'm assuming at the house you had a bit of a cellar there?
I did indeed. Wonderful cellar, which accommodated about 1,200 bottles. And when I moved into the condo, which was half the size of the house, there was no room for the wine cellar, so I had to look around for a place to store the wines. So I went to the owners of the condo and I said, look, this is my problem. Where can I find space to build a wine cellar? And one of the owners of the condo development was a wine person, so he was sympathetic to my cause. And he says, well, what we can do is sell you 10 square feet of space in the parking lot, and you can build walls and insulate and put in your temperature control system and an alarm system, and that's what I did. So now I have a wonderful cellar, which is 10 foot square, with a marble top tasting table and two chairs and racking for 1,500 bottles of wine.
So you took all the wine from the house over, right?
Yeah. But you know, the mistake most people make when they want to start building a wine cellar is they think small. They say, okay, I want so many bottles. But once you have it built, it's amazing how quickly it fills. And you say, I wish I had actually built double the size.
How much time do you spend down there?
Well, my wife says I spend far too much time. but I'm down there pretty much daily, so either sort of picking up wine or putting wine in. I also keep, you know, about 50-odd bottles in the apartment, which I have to taste, you know, because I'm tasting every day, and writing about wine. And on my website, I recommend 3 wines a week, you know, usually in the inexpensive categories of $10 to $20. So at TonyAspler.com, you can go and get my recommendations for wines, you know, and what to serve with them.
Now, these 1,500 bottles of wine that you have in your cellar, are these, I mean, this is over a lifetime of collecting, I suppose, right?
Well, it turns over. I mean, my wife and I have have wine with dinner every night, okay?
Yeah.
So when you do the math, that's 365 bottles of wine. And then when we're entertaining, we're obviously serving more wine. So we're probably using 500 bottles of wine a year. At least. So that cellar turns over all the time. And so you buy, and you use, and you replace. So I have some wines that I've had for, you know, 15, 20 years, but I'm going to have to drink those very soon. A lot of people, when they get fine wine and they're aging it, they'll say, well, I've got to save it for a great occasion. And they keep saving it. And that great occasion gets further and further away because the occasion is never big enough to open that wine as it gets older and older. And then ultimately, if and when that great occasion comes and they open the wine, they'll find that it's over the hill. And they said, oh, my goodness, I should have had that 10 years ago.
Do you have things of value?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. And then what's the key there of knowing what to keep? Like if you go to the liquor store today, and you want to sort of invest in wine.
Yes.
What do we look for?
You look for wines that are going to age well and wines with provenance. You know, you're looking for basically blue chip wines. That is first growth Bordeaux, super second Bordeaux, domain bottled Burgundies from good producers, super Tuscan wines like Sassacaia, Tignanello, Salaia. So you're looking for wines that other collectors would want to have. And so you're paying a premium to begin with, but 5 years down the road, you'll find that the price of those wines has gone up exponentially. I'll give you an example. 1972 in Ontario, when the liquor board there put a Chateau de Chem 1967 on the shelves at $17.95, and this is one of the great dessert wines of the world. That bottle, if you had any now, would be worth $2,000 a bottle. So, you know, wine does appreciate.
Yeah. You don't need to build a cellar like you have.
No.
To keep wine. Well, what's a mistake that we usually make when we're keeping wine at home, whether we live in a house or an apartment?
The general mistake is putting it in an area where there is a fluctuation of temperature. You want constant temperature of around 55 degrees Fahrenheit. You want an area that is free from vibrations, i.e. spin dryers, compressors, machinery, because those vibrations will cause the wine to oscillate and to age before its time. You want darkness, and you want it free from smells, i.e. chemical solvents, paints, etc. So if you're keeping it in the basement, make sure it's well away from anything that any chemical solution or paint. And the wines are, if they're under cork, to be laid down on their sides. So the cork is kept wet at all times, so the cork doesn't dry out and air, you know, gets into the wine. So if generally, I mean, most people, they'll keep a small stash of wine, maybe a dozen bottles for home use, okay? The best place to keep them would be in the bedroom, which is the coolest part of the house where there's the least traffic, in the bottom of a closet in the dark, and so you don't have any smells there, and you don't have any vibrations, and that's probably the best if you don't want to get into the expense of having a wine cabinet or a wine fridge, which is temperature controlled and climate controlled. Otherwise, just find the coolest part, and you know the there has to be some humidity as well. So because if it's too dry, it's going to dry out the cork, okay, and that's bad.
Yeah.
So up to 70% humidity is good.
I like cooking with wine, like I make beef bourguignon or coq au vin.
Yeah.
Is it permissible when we're serving the food, say I'm using a bottle of Burgundy in the meal, to serve the rest of that with the dinner?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing about cooking, funnily enough, I just made a bourguignon 3 nights ago and used a whole bottle of Burgundy in it. So there wasn't anything left to drink with it, so I had to open another bottle of Burgundy. But absolutely. And I think the mistake that people make about cooking with wine is that if they find a wine that they don't like or is off, they say, oh, I'll use it in cooking. But why would you want to introduce a flavor into the food that you didn't like in the glass?
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing about cooking with wine, of course, is that you're not getting the alcohol because the heat drives off alcohol. The boiling point of alcohol is much lower than the boiling point of water. Just by heating a dish, you are driving off the alcohol.
And you can serve wine with hot dogs?
Yes.
What kind of wine would you?
Well, I would with hot dogs, I would serve something like a simple red wine like a Beaujolais or a Valpolicella.
Yeah.
Or a Gamay, a BC Gamay or something like that.
The photograph of you on the cover, is that in the wine cellar there?
Yes, it is. Yeah. That's me on the cover.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this has been a pleasure again to have you on the program, and congratulations on this book. I mean, as I said, I don't drink wine, but just the story that you tell of your life and how you've come to wine, I mean, it's just fascinating to read. So congratulations on the book, and continued good luck with it, Tony.
Thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you.
You're very welcome. The website for more is tonyaspler.com. The book is called Tony Aspler Cellar Book, How to Design, Build, Stock, and Manage Your Wine Cellar Wherever You Are. It's published by Random House. The author, Tony Aspler on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plano.